One of my favorite things about being a military spouse is the friendships that I have. I have friends all over. And I don't just mean acquaintances. These people at these duty stations become like your sisters. You know, we're all so close, and you have lifelong friendship.
Hello, welcome to the Juggling Life Finding Balance podcast special edition of Sister Talk with Viv and Becca. I'm one of your hosts, Vivian Cummins, and I believe taking a few moments out of our busy day to enjoy some good old-fashioned fun is a necessity for a balanced life, and that is what Sister Talk is all about. Before we begin today's episode, which is celebrating our military spouses, I just want to remind you to subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen or watch, and leave us a 5-star review if you've enjoyed today's show. Becca Robinson, my co-host for today, was once my sister-in-law. While we're no longer related by marriage, we are still sisters and the best of friends. Becca is a career professional. She's a writer, a mom, and a Grams, which I love. And she's also a military spouse to her husband of 26 years. We are so excited that you are here. And if you are a military spouse, today we want to just take a moment to honor you and thank you for your service. So let's get started. Hey, Becca, I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you. Are you having a good week?
I am. It was a busy week. So I'm glad the weekend's here. And the sun is out. We have not seen the sun here in California for quite some time. So I'm actually, after we're done, I'm going to go outside and take a walk.
Oh, good. Good. Well, let's see. What happened to me this week? I got a ticket today, but this week. And it's the first ticket in 30 years of driving that I've gotten an actual ticket, a speeding ticket. And it was for 10 over the speed limit. And I never go 10 over the speed limit.
So you did today or yesterday.
I do not believe I was going 10 over.
Oh, my gosh.
He wrote on the ticket that his laser had been calibrated that morning. So I don't know if I have a leg to stand on to go in and try to fight it, but
oh no.
I wasn't looking at my speedometer, but I was going with the flow of traffic, and I was in a downtown area, and I have a Suburban, so I have a really big car, so it's real tight in downtown. So I don't see how I could have possibly been going 10 miles over the speed limit. So it's 25 and I was supposedly going 35. So I've prided myself for 30 years of not having a ticket, and I'm hurt about it, and I probably deserved it. I probably was going over, but I was approaching a stoplight, so I don't understand. So I'm going to court.
You have to go to court. So are you going to court because you're contesting it, or are you going to court because you just, yeah, that's where you go to pay?
Well, no, you can call and pay it, but I'm going to go in because I'm going to see if my 30 years of good driving record, if possibly they will just, since I wasn't doing anything reckless, if they will possibly write it off. I don't know if this is a thing or not. I've never had a ticket before. So
I have had many. Would you like me to tell you how things work? Okay. I'm going to knock on wood because I haven't had any tickets in a long time. But when I was younger, as you know, I was at your house a lot when I was dating your brother. And I lived out in the country, and I had a curfew. So I had a curfew up until the day I left the house. And so I would really push it, and I would drive from your house to mine. And I don't even know how many miles it was, but it was on the highway. And there were these blinking lights on Highway 81. And I would barrel through those blinking lights towards my house, and there was always a cop there. His name was Ray. I don't know if you remember Ray. Ray the cop.
Yes.
And he got me every single time. And it's like, I knew he was there. I don't know why. I just kept going. And so he wrote me, growing up in high school, he wrote me probably 7 tickets high school from 16 to 17, I guess. Golly. So in a year, I got 7 tickets. I'm surprised I did not go to prison for that. So anyways, but I had a job, so I always paid my tickets myself. So I never wanted my parents to know. So then when I got married and we had to get our own insurance, they pulled up my driving record And I had 7 tickets. And so our insurance was like off the chain. It was just expensive. And in fact, we had one insurance company. We had 2 insurance companies. The first one, they went ahead and gave us insurance. But then when they ran my background check, they canceled us. And then we ended up finding another insurance company that would actually take us, because I had 7 tickets on my record. And so anyways, I got those all taken care of. Eventually they fall off and stuff. So yes, I did contest 1, and I don't remember the reason for it. I thought I had a good reason. So I did go to court or whatever to contest it. And luckily the police officer did not show up that wrote me the ticket. And so I won just by default. But I'm so glad that he didn't, because I don't think I had a very good excuse. Right. I didn't have a good track record. So anyway, so I can't give you any advice there. So good luck. And no, congratulations on the 30 years. That's amazing that you made it through school, high school and all that, because I did not.
Yeah, because I feel like I'm a very cautious driver. My best friend would argue and say, no, that's not true, because she doesn't like riding with me. But my driving record shows something different. So,
well, anyway. I can't wait to hear how this works out. So
I'll fill you in. Okay, so today is Wednesday, and Military Spouse Appreciation Day is happening in just a couple of days. And because you and I are both military spouses, I'm current, I'm active, and you are retired. Mm-hmm. Your husband is retired. We both really love to celebrate military spouses because we've lived in that world. So we just, I would like to talk about that today. And
I would love to talk about that today.
So do you want to talk about a little bit about yourself being a military spouse?
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. So let's see. I have 19 years. So my first husband was Air Force, who was your brother. We were married for 10 years. So I was a military spouse for 10 years with the Air Force there. And then we divorced, and then I remarried, and my current husband was also Air Force. And so so I got like 19 years, I guess, as being a military spouse. And so that journey took me. So here's the funny thing. So when your brother and I, when he first joined the Air Force, we were thinking, oh, we're going to travel. We're going to go to faraway lands. It's going to be such an experience. And we're from Oklahoma, and we got Altus, Oklahoma. So we were literally down the street. Okay, not down the street. It was about a 2-hour drive from home, which was kind of cool. But, you know, I was like really looking forward to traveling with the military. And then 4 years later, we did get orders to Simbach, Germany. So I got to spend 4 years in Germany, which I loved. I would love to go back now, being older and having a little bit more spending money, because I didn't have a lot of money back then to buy all the things that I wanted to buy. That's where kind of a little off topic, but that's where I got my career too, with the federal government. I started with the Air Force in Germany. But anyways, fast forward to my current husband, Eddie. He was also serving. And so the bases that we were at was Hill Air Force Base in Utah. And then we spent a couple of years in Okinawa, Japan at Kadena Air Base. And then he retired. He retired out of Japan, and we came back to the States. So that's kind of been my experience. And I, you know, Becca, I know you all are Army, but we had a key spouse program. And the key spouse is kind of like the spouse that's at an installation, at least, is kind of like the main person to kind of oversee all of the spouses and make sure that they have everything they need, whether their significant other is deployed or not. And so I kind of ran that program for Hill Air Force Base for about 4 years. And so that was absolutely amazing.
I think I remember, weren't you on TV for that? Did you have your television debut for that? Or was that for something else?
I thought it was for something else, but I was in the paper. I was in the paper a lot as the key spouse and stuff like that. So, yeah. celebrity for a few minutes.
I've also been on that end of it too. I enjoy volunteering. It's one of my favorite things to do, is to volunteer with the military spouses. My absolute favorite thing to do is when new spouses come in to a duty station, especially if it's their first duty station. I like to reach out. We have all of these pages now, you know, on Facebook. Whether it's my neighborhood page or it's the installation page, whatever it is, usually people will post on there, you know, coming in a couple of months, you know, we'll be there next week, whatever it may be. And I like to reach out to them and say, hey, you know, here are the ins and outs of this installation, you know, or I'm here if you have any questions to help you. And I have made so many friends doing this, and it's just really fulfilling to me to help these people, because for our first duty station, I didn't have anyone to do that. Well, for one, we didn't have Facebook. You know, we didn't have those.
I was going to say, we didn't have that back then. My gosh, I can't imagine what life would have been like in the 90s if I'd have had something like that.
So different. You know, it was 2006, November 2006, when Keith joined the Army. So even though, you know, that's been 17 and a half years ago, or 17 and whatever, however long it's been, around 17 years ago, it's so much has changed since then. And so it's just fun for me. It's fun for me to be a part of the military spouse community. I have a couple of totes that have things in it. You know, we often have to camp in our homes, you know, for a while until our household goods get delivered. So it has everything in it that you can imagine that you could use to camp in your home, you know, the totes do, and including, I also have a card table and some chairs, you know, and I'll reach out.
Do you have an air mattress?
I do. And
we do too. We still have it after all these years. We still have that air mattress that we sleep on sometimes when we move.
Yeah. We always sleep on that. So I will reach out to them, like, when you get here and you don't have your household goods, come by my house, or I'll come by your house and I'll bring you the things. And we kind of get to see each other face to face and meet face to face. You know, so that's one of my favorite things. But I really love being a military spouse. It's going to be very sad for me when that life ends for me coming up soon, you know, in about 2.5 years.
Yes. Well, I will tell you if it's helpful. So it doesn't have to end. I know a lot of times, I mean, that's kind of what I thought too when Eddie retired. I was like, oh, I'm going to miss this life. And there's so many opportunities that you can continue to volunteer and, you know, like on family readiness centers or, you know, at each installation, they always have something like that. And there's so many areas that, you know, you can still volunteer. I don't do that as much where I'm at right now because there's not a lot of military installations close by. The closest Air Force base is like an hour and a half away. But there is, you know, I will say that there is going to be that grieving period because you're so involved in it and stuff. And then it kind of, you know, starts to fade a little bit. But if I could encourage you at all, I would just say to find those places to plug in. And I think this is a great opportunity here. We have the opportunity to continue to talk and to speak to some of the other military spouses that are out there.
Yes, I do appreciate that. And I will more than likely volunteer at the USO for sure, you know, assuming that there is one near my home.
Love that.
I just, you know, I really want to just give a shout out and say thank you to the military spouses. It usually gets me a little emotional when I talk to them.
Thank you.
I can't help it. I have such a respect for military spouses. And I feel like just because we are them, it makes it seem like we're speaking about ourselves, but that's not the case at all. I've seen so many different military spouses and the challenges that they have endured, like during deployments or TDY trips. And for those of you who don't know what a TDY trip, military personnel, they go on trips often for training and for work, and they're gone a lot. And so that makes us as mothers, if you're a mother, geographically single parenting, and it's very difficult. And I just have such high respect for these women who live in these challenges. And they also, some of them work, you know, they work, they try, you know, there are career-driven military spouses, even though it's very difficult for military spouses to work, which Viv has sent me an article recently about the challenges of working military spouses. And I have the stat in front of me. I'm going to have to just look down and read it. And it says unemployment rate among the spouses of military service members is 21%, which is well above the overall unemployment rate of 3.7% as of January of this year. And it's just so unfortunate that women can't find their place in the career field sometimes due to their husband's service. So I'm thankful they're working on it. There are some solutions coming down the pipe for that. And so it's very exciting. I was a working military spouse and it was very difficult. I did have to work.
It really is. I've been very, very fortunate in that I got my start when I was overseas. And so I got military spouse preference, which is still a thing with the federal government. Right. You can get military spouse preference. So I got in that way. And then I eventually was able to get career status. And so, but it was so helpful for me that it kind of gives you that preference. That's in the name. Gives you preference. Doesn't necessarily guarantee you the job, of course, but it does give you preference over individuals. And it's very similar to veterans preference that usually puts people, you know, a little higher category for selection and interviews and stuff. But I was very blessed in that I did not ever lose a paycheck. So when I was overseas, I got to transfer to the Air Force Personnel Center at Randolph Air Force Base. And so that was when I got started getting my career status. And then I moved around a little bit in my own federal Air Force career. But then when I married my current husband, Eddie, I was able to transfer to the base that he was at. So luckily I didn't have to lose my job there. But then when he got orders to Japan, that's when I freaked out. I was like, okay, because I was starting to get in my own career at a level that I was starting to make some pretty decent money for myself, right? And so I was like, okay, now we got to juggle these dual careers in our family. And so, again, I was very blessed in that I was able to secure a slot. So I went straight from when we left Utah, I went straight to there. And then when he decided to retire, again, I made some phone calls, got online, got on USA Jobs, and was able to secure that job back. But that was actually one of the deciding factors for him to retire when he did. So he was hitting 20 years, which was he was retirement eligible, but he was a senior master sergeant, and so he was an E-8. And so everybody, all his senior leaders and stuff, said, "You are a shoe-in for E-9. You're going to be a chief. You know, you got to stay in. You got to go for that last stripe." And just for our listeners, if you don't know, for the Air Force, that's the highest enlisted is chief, master sergeant. And so we spent, oh my goodness, months and months talking about what are we going to do? Because the problem that we were facing was if he tested and made chief, that would generate a new assignment. And he would have to stay in for 3 more years. And at that point, I was a GS-13 at that point. And for me, for my career, it goes up to 15. And so I was getting up there. And I was like, if we get a base that is in the middle of nowhere, and those of you who are listening who have military experience with the Air Force, you know what those bases are. I said, my career's over. You know, I'll have to take a downgrade. I'll have to go on leave without pay. I'm not going to be able to continue. And so that was what we had to decide is, you know, looking at it from a financial standpoint, if he made chief, this is how much he would make. This is how much he would make in retirement versus this is my potential. And I have the potential to get up to the GS-15 levels and even the senior executive service if I wanted to. And so looking at it long term, we had to make that decision. And so what we decided was he would test one time. And if he didn't make it, then he'd pull the plug and he'd follow me in my career. And if he made it, then that was what was meant to be. And I would follow him and just, you know, pray that everything would fall into place. And he did not make it. And I had mixed emotions. I mean, when he told me, my heart sank for him because I know that is such a important milestone in an active duty member's career. But then I was like, oh, thank goodness. You know, because now I get my life back and we can have some level of control of our life. So anyways, that was my experience with the whole career and dual job thing.
It's so hard at that level. I mean, we're at that level right now and we've been contemplating for the last year whether for him to stay in or not to get 9.
It's hard.
And it's, you know, we being Army, he would have to commit 5 more years.
Oh, it's 5.
And
wow.
He would have to go. Oh, and he would have to go to school in El Paso, Texas, which is for a whole year. And
oh, no. Yeah, that's... Oh, that's...
that's even though I work remotely and I could work from there, it is pretty much in the middle of nowhere, as you were talking about the middle of nowhere.
So, yes, yes.
I'm sure... I know I have friends who live there. They love it. I'm sure it's amazing for some people. It may be amazing for me, but... I think we've finally turned a leaf and decided, you know, this is it. We are actually we have lived in Fort Hood, Texas. We've lived in Washington State. I have to think of our travels. From Washington State, we went back to Oklahoma, where we're from. And now we went to Alaska from there. Now we are in Georgia. And we are actually on an Air Force installation because my son is stationed here, and we wanted to be close to him and his children. And our daughter is stationed only 3 hours from here in Florida. So this has been perfect, but we've only been here for about a year and 3 months, and we are moving again. We will be leaving here in 2 months to go back to Oklahoma for him to finish out his career. And it's only about 30 minutes from where we're from originally, so we will probably just stay there. And
that's
he'll
awesome.
Get out, and he'll be on the GS track like you are. And
I can help him. I can tell him what needs to do. Yeah, I can help him there.
All the moving. I mean, do you have a favorite moving story or a favorite any? I know there are so many, but it's hard when you're put on the spot to think of like funny moments. I actually have one. If you don't, and you can be thinking while I'm talking.
Well, I will tell you this. It's not easy to move. So it's hard to say what is my favorite move or favorite story, because they're pretty stressful, quite honestly.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You've got people coming in and packing you up and all of that. But here's one funny thing that I was actually quite horrified. We had packers come, and they packed our bed and everything like that. And underneath my bed, it was a whole bunch of used earplugs. And I was so embarrassed because I use earplugs sometimes. My husband snores, and I know I always lose them. Like, I wake up and I'm like, where are my earplugs? I'm like, oh my gosh, did they like go into my head? Where are they? And when they packed up the bag there, or the bed, there was just all these earplugs. And I'm like, oh, excuse me. And I'm like, you know, scooping them up. That was funny. I just was embarrassed. Now I know where they all go. They fall out of my ears and they go under the bed.
Anytime something is left behind that's kind of embarrassing, we laugh about it. And we talk about, I wonder, I always have to say, I'm sure they've seen something more embarrassing. I'm sure they have. It's really the only way you can get through it, because we live in these homes. I mean, we're not, there are temporary homes, but we live here. So
yes,
we live our lives and we have normal things like everyone else does. And we always try to be very careful, you know, and remove anything that, I mean, just sometimes it's just dumb things that we remove that everyone has in their home. But it's like, I just don't want the movers to see this or that. But
right.
We think they've probably seen a lot. I tend to be very friendly with the movers and chat with them a lot.
We buy them pizza so that
we always buy them
like,
food.
Here's some pizza. Here, take care of my stuff.
Yes. Yeah, we always do. We quit doing pizza after the first two moves. And this is why through one of my conversations, I asked one of the movers what kind of pizza they wanted. And he said, well, let's see. We had pepperoni yesterday, something.
And everybody
on Monday,
does it.
Monday we had sausage, and I said, so you guys get a lot of pizza, right? And he was like, oh yes, we eat pizza nearly every day of the week. And so I said, how about we break this cycle this week?
This cycle.
What would you like? So I stopped doing pizza for that reason. And then I usually give them like three options of different restaurants that are close that I can just run to and pick things up. And so now we have a variety of things we do, but I get to know them really well, and I chat with them, and they tell me lots of things that happen, you know, during their packing. And it's so funny. It's just, there's so many funny things.
Oh my gosh.
I'm sure lots of female or male listeners, you know, they probably have so many stories of funny things that have happened during moves. I have too many to count, really. We've lived in some amazing places. We've had some really great PCSs, which for people who don't know, that's what it's called when you move, when a military family moves. We've had some really great ones and we've had some really bad ones. The last one, moving from Alaska to Oklahoma, or I'm sorry, to Georgia, we took a 30-day road trip.
Becca, to get to Georgia. I couldn't do it.
It was quite interesting. Because I work remotely, I was able to just work part-time. Mm-hmm. And you know, they knew I was on a road trip, so I was able to work part-time and take my job on the road with me when we had service. We were in Canada for a week,
we didn't have
much service, but quite interesting. I know we're about to run out of time pretty soon, so I do want to touch on the military spouses a little bit more. And I don't know, I have friends. I'll say one of my favorite things about the military, being a military spouse, is the friendships that I have. I have friends all over. And I don't just mean acquaintances. These people at these duty stations become like your sisters, you know. We're all so close. And it was just my birthday recently, and I got so many gifts and cards, you know, and half of them were from my military sisters, you know, and I'm sure the same for you. You have lifelong friendship.
I do. And thank goodness now that we have Facebook and Instagram and all those things, because that I've reconnected with so many of them. I mean, there's so many people that you think about over the years and you kind of lose touch, but then you find each other. In fact, I've got a podcast that I'm going to be recording today, actually, with somebody that I was stationed with in Germany.
Nice.
And we reconnected about, I don't know, 8 or 9 years ago. And so, but yeah, we picked right up where we left off, all those years ago. Yeah. And so it's just, they become your family, because you don't have your family there. Your intimate family, you've got those folks, but you don't have the extended family anymore there. Right. So,
especially in Germany, or when you were in Japan, you know, places like that.
Right.
We've never done an overseas tour like that, but they do consider Alaska as an OCONUS overseas.
Yeah.
And it was definitely the duty station that we had the closest friends.
Mm-hmm.
We're so far away. It's so expensive for people to fly to us, and the weather, a lot of people don't want to visit because of the weather.
I'm sorry. I wouldn't have come to visit. I don't care for the snow.
And so we became such good friends. And we have one couple that we became very good friends with. And my husband worked with Jeff, and he and his wife and I became very good friends. They're actually at the duty station we're moving to in May.
Oh, that's wonderful.
We are going to be living 3 minutes from one another. And so we come full circle being back with them again. So it's the perk. There are a lot of bad things that come along with being a military spouse, and trying not to dwell on the bad things. We all know what comes along with it. The sadness, the heartbreak. But, you know, that's why we both wanted to celebrate military spouses, because military spouses are so resilient and can
absolutely
come through all of that badness and make it positive, make it funny. Mm-hmm. You know, that's all we can do is just make it comical, make our lives comical, because otherwise we would just be stuck in a rut.
Well, yeah. And I think, too, I think it takes a very special person to be able to withstand the military spouse lifestyle. I mean, because like you mentioned, I mean, you have to take on the role of mom and dad and caregiver and, you know, lawn service. I remember there was a time where, I mean, my husband, he gave me training on how to mow the yard, because that was his thing. He gave me training on how to mow the yard, but he didn't give me training on how to use the weed whacker, because he's like, don't worry about it. You just cut it close. You'll be fine. And we lived on base, and there's certain things that, you know, rules you have to follow about your yard. And I had to weed whack. And so I didn't have training, so I had to improvise, and I used my scissors. And I literally went around the perimeter of our home, Becca, and I cut the grass with around the curb and with my scissors, because I'm trying to maintain and not get us written up and all that. And so, I mean, you just learn to, and you make friends, and your kids make friends, and you just, you try to have things be right. as normal as possible when your spouse is deployed. And, you know, I had written a blog post a couple years back on just some of the tips, and we can put them in the show notes here, but some tips for military spouses, you know, especially folks that are new. But, you know, first and foremost, that first deployment is terrifying. And every deployment after that will be terrifying. They don't get better. Unfortunately, they don't get better. And that's part of one of those things that you were mentioning that's not so good.
Right.
But you have family there, and, you know, and you've got people there to lift you up when you're feeling sad. And you've got people there that will take your kids for you and let you have a girl night or go get your nails done or something to allow you to release. And, you know, so I always tell everybody that I come into contact with that are going through those deployments is to be sure to take care of yourself, you know, and be careful not to get into that funk and in that worry, and get your support from your family and friends and your church if you go to church, and that kind of thing. And the other thing that I had a military spouse when I was at Hill Air Force Base as the key spouse. And she had come to me and was really upset with her husband, who was deployed, and had told me that they had gotten into an argument on the phone. And just so folks know, you know, they don't, a lot of times the folks that are deployed, they don't get a lot of time to talk on the telephone, right. if at all. And especially if they are in, you know, an area that's hostile or what have you. And we had that conversation about, you know, if at all possible, keep those conversations happy and upbeat.
Yes.
And I think the reason just goes without saying, right? And so those are just some of the things, you know, that as spouses that I think a lot of people don't realize that they are juggling on a daily basis, you know? And so anyways, those are just some of the things that have come to my mind as a spouse, some of the tips, if you will. Do you have any tips?
I do. My biggest one that I like, biggest piece of advice I like to give, especially now that I feel like I'm a seasoned wife, you know, one of the ones I like to give is during deployment. My husband's had 5 deployments, and sometimes we go into survival mode. And so I like to give the tip of thrive. Don't just survive, thrive.
Love it.
People don't realize that you can thrive. You know, you make your own little life, your own little without them. You know, life does go on when they're not here. There's a piece of it missing, of course, but you still have to move on, especially when you have a family, and you have to don't just survive it. Thrive.
Yeah.
You know,
thrive.
Let's do some great things. This last deployment, my husband has just recently been home from deployment, and my thriving was coming together with Viv for this podcast.
Oh, you know, thank you. Yay.
You know, Viv reached out to me, I believe it was in October, and he came home in December, I believe it was October, and asked me to do this with her, and that was my thrive, and so
that's wonderful. Oh, thank you so much. It's funny that you mentioned this as we wrap up for today, where you said, you know, thrive, not just survive. That's actually the quote that I have on my website. And now I believe God created us to thrive, not just to survive our everyday
right.
lives. And so I think that is absolutely precious that we were able to make that connection here when talking about military spouses as well. So, Becca, I have so enjoyed this conversation with you. And I know I could talk to you forever, especially about this topic. But I'm going to just let listeners know that you'll see in the show notes some links to some areas for military spouses. There's Military One Source. There's also some, Becca and I both have contributed stories on the Memory Blogger site, which is a sister site to my personal website. And you can go there and read some of that and get some tips. And if you're not in the military or you don't have a family member that's in the military, be good to read up on that so that you too can lift up and honor our military spouses this year. So with that, thank you for joining us for another episode of Sister Talk with Viv and Becca. And until next time, stay balanced and be blessed. Thank you for hanging out with me here on the Juggling Life Finding Balance podcast. I hope our time together leaves you feeling encouraged and inspired. If you enjoyed today's episode, I would love it if you would click that subscribe button wherever you are listening or watching, and then share it with a friend. And please come visit me on my website, viviancummins.com, where you'll find more great information and resources about how you can move that needle from busy to balanced. Until next time, stay blessed and be balanced.